From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The first trial of the special counsel's investigation is wrapping up. On Friday, the federal government's trial against Donald Trump's former campaign chair, Paul Manafort, wound down. Manafort, who has an ugly history outside the U.S. of helping to elect dictators and demagogues, faced multiple charges of tax and bank fraud. He chose to take the case to trial rather than settle. Among those testifying against him was his former right-hand man, Rick Gates, who was also an aide in the Trump campaign. The judge in the case, T.S. Ellis III, displayed anger at prosecutors throughout the trial, even going as far as losing his temper over allowing a witness to remain in the courtroom. After the judge realized he had approved of the witness remaining, he apologized, but prosecutors feared the jury was now prejudiced against the witness in question. It was not expected for the president to figure in this particular trial, but Donald Trump's name did come up several times. Trump has repeatedly denounced the special counsel's investigation as a whole as a witch hunt and a hoax. He did admit, as the Manafort trial was playing out, that his son's 2016 meeting at a Trump Tower meeting with a Russian lawyer was about obtaining opposition research on Hillary Clinton. We turn to Kevin Gostola, managing editor of Shadowproof.com. He hosts and co-hosts and produces the weekly podcast Unauthorized Disclosure. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
So this particular trial was supposed to have focused entirely on Manafort's tax and bank fraud allegations. It was supposed to be sort of separate from the whole Russia collusion story. What should be our takeaway? I mean, when I sort of look at this as a whole, essentially Trump chose as his campaign chair a guy who is corrupt through and through.
Yeah, I think the takeaway, although it may seem smaller than Trump was involved in Russian collusion, and we've got the proof here. I mean, that's not what we have. But it is important that this is an individual, Paul Manafort, who's working with oligarchs, who was in Ukraine, was basically involved in making inroads with some of the worst gangsters in Ukraine, had people who were... the oligarchs of Russia were people that he would be aligning himself with, and that this is somebody who was going to great lengths, it seems, even if you believe Rick Gates, having him work to conceal millions upon millions of dollars in offshore accounts, some of those accounts in Cyprus. So engaging in the kind of corporate conduct that we've seen become a hallmark of the Trump administration. For example, in the past week, this week of August 10th, we've had news making headlines about Wilbur Ross and the hundreds of millions of dollars that he might be swindling people out of. So I think Paul Manafort fits in quite well into the story of Donald Trump's administration.
And of course, we also just recently heard the indictment against New York Representative Chris Collins, who was a very early supporter of President Trump, although didn't work for the Trump campaign. He's just been indicted on insider trading charges linked to a text that he apparently sent while at a White House picnic last year. So certainly in the orbit of Trump are all of these folks who have flouted the rule of law, generally in service of their own, personal bottom line and their wallets. So there were the bank fraud charges, that is that Manafort essentially lied to banks about his income in order to apply for loans. He said he made more money when his companies were making losses. Then there's also essentially tax fraud, right, where he didn't declare money that he earned from his consulting work in Ukraine to the IRS and thereby offshored it, which is also something very commonly done by Washington operatives.
That's correct. I mean, this behavior, and as you point to the kinds of people around him, one of the figures that's of interest and who I think we'll be hearing a lot more of, and especially I think that the media, I'll say particularly CNN, might fall in love with him just for ratings, is this guy Konstantin Kilimnik, who is accused of witness tampering. And I think Paul Manafort even faces a witness tampering charge as well in relation to this investigation that's been ongoing. And Constantine is this guy who is known as like Manafort's Manafort. I mean, he's only 5 feet tall, and Paul Manafort's a much bigger guy. So it works out that he's kind of like a mini-me to Manafort. And he was basically brought in the Ukraine to help Manafort speak to people who he needed to get through. He needed to break through the language barrier in the Ukraine. And so he brought in this guy, and Constantine emulated Paul, wanted to have the same luxury clothing, drive similar cars, and have the same sort of style and, I suppose, flair of Paul Manafort that has been, you know, mostly mocked in the last couple of weeks by many in the media. He had these really lavish and ridiculous looking coats and
the ostrich jacket.
Yeah, the ostrich jacket is something that has been quite a highlight of the Paul Manafort trial. And so, you know, this guy was Paul Manafort referred to Constantine as my Russian brain, and really used him to make inroads with the kind of oligarchs that he was doing business with in the Ukraine. And so I think like that kind of thing that we're just really getting into here is the Mueller investigation has captured a lot of these individuals that were engaged in this kind of conduct that, you know, maybe the Justice Department wasn't going to do a whole lot about until they were involved in suspicious activity around Donald Trump's campaign.
Right. So this specific trial was narrowly focused on one set of indictments, right? The tax and bank fraud charges. It was just the first trial. And there will be other trials depending upon if people choose to not take plea deals. And Manafort faces other charges. We haven't yet gotten to see any specific indictments against people close to Trump on the Russia collusion story. There've been Russian citizens who've been charged. Just staying on the Manafort trial for a minute, Rick Gates, his right-hand man, testified against him. And what we found out in this trial was that not only was Rick Gates helping Manafort to hide money from the IRS, he himself was embezzling from Manafort. So there was internecine corruption going on, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you can tell the bad blood because the defense attorneys didn't miss any beats when it came to going after Rick Gates. And that makes sense. He's a star witness. The government was going to do as much as they could to use him against Paul Manafort. But they wanted to do a whole section of the trial where they dug into four alleged extramarital affairs that Rick Gates had. The judge would only let them talk about something related to his secret life and how long that might have lasted with only one extramarital affair. I believe there was only one that ended up getting on the record. But again, and like you were saying, stealing money from Manafort. And again, they wanted to emphasize that he had lied to Mueller when the investigation first began, that I believe in the first contact with Robert Mueller, whomever would have been representing the investigation when they brought him in for questioning, he lied. And then, you know, they put pressure on him and he flipped and agreed to testify against Paul Manafort. And so the defense attorneys kept emphasizing to the jury, how can you believe this man? He's a liar and then also a philanderer. So he'll do anything basically to save his own skin.
Now, I understand that no part of the affairs was supposed to come up in court, but the judge essentially allowed it because Gates admitted to a question about his quote secret life.
Yeah, I think that's how it went down. I think that Paul Manafort recognizes that Rick Gates could completely nail him and be what's the decisive factor in the jury's decision to convict him, because he was this right-hand man who was engaged in all this activity. So if he says that Manafort put me up to all of this, then that seems fairly credible if you're a juror, I imagine.
Right. Now, this judge in the case, T.S. Ellis III, much has been made of the fact that he repeatedly lost his temper at prosecutors. There was one witness named Welch who remained in the courtroom, and when the judge found out, he had an angry outburst when he was shown the written authorization he had given to allow this person to remain and this witness to remain in court. He did apologize, but he seemed to take a very harsh and critical approach to government prosecutors. What does that indicate to you? Is that any cause for concern?
Yeah, I don't know if this is just him wanting to seem impartial in a case that has gotten a lot of media attention, and so there's already been a lot of built-up animosity towards Paul Manafort before there's even a conviction handed down. And I think that probably a lot of the country already expects that he would be convicted. So maybe he's compensating and trying to seem more impartial than he typically would. But also, it does seem like some of the conduct of prosecutors has upset him. Like something about their attitudes and facial expressions while they're sitting and cross-examinations are going on. I think he was offended by some of their demeanor and behavior within the courtroom. So it seems like maybe they might be engaging in some conduct that does, not really fit with the decorum you're expected to follow while you're overseeing a trial or engaged in trying somebody.
So, from what you can tell, does this trial bode or give us any indication for what's to come? Because the federal prosecutors were very well prepared, had reams and reams of evidence. And this is just the first trial. It doesn't even, as we said, address the Russia collusion story yet. What does this indicate for you for what's to come?
Yeah, I'll just quickly add that to your previous question. I think the judge was even a little overwhelmed by how much evidence the prosecutors wanted to present. That was also one of the issues that he had with them, was that they wanted to just, plunge right into so much material, and it seemed to not be just, a bit too much for the jury, perhaps, or even just too much for the defense, and that he wanted them to dial it back a little bit. But yeah, I think that what we're seeing is that this was a first step, a methodical step to maybe get a case to convict somebody that they had a strong case against. And then obviously the Mueller investigation is going to proceed full steam ahead. We've had many headlines in the last week around where the Mueller investigation is potentially going, and it does seem to be headed towards this direction where we're looking at the cast of characters that may have had or maybe didn't have, we don't really know the truth, interactions or communications with WikiLeaks around the information that was allegedly leaked, or interactions with alleged hackers. It seems that like that's where the next chapter of the Mueller investigation, I do imagine that the next trial that we see is going to be for someone who engaged in something related to Russian hacking, or maybe it's going to be an unrelated charge that was found in the process of investigating alleged Russian hacking. But I do think that what they really want, if you're a part of the Mueller investigation, is finally something that can tie into this widespread investigation that's been going on within the intelligence community and then by Mueller's team to go after alleged Russian operatives who are involved in hacking.
Now, in the middle of the Manafort trial, as I mentioned earlier, Trump unexpectedly decided to tweet a defense of what transpired at the 2016 Trump Tower meeting. This was the infamous meeting that he says he didn't know anything about until the New York Times asked him about it. And this was a meeting attended by his son, attended by several other, his son-in-law as well, Jared Kushner, several people from his campaign, and a Russian lawyer, Natalia Veselinskaya. Then Trump had kept claiming that it was about Russian adoptions. And then he just decided to admit that it was about getting dirt on Hillary Clinton and that he has decided there was nothing illegal about this, I imagine. And this tweet came at the same time that we've heard reports that Mueller was going to likely start considering Trump's tweets in building an obstruction of a justice case against him. What do you make of, like, how do you make sense of what Trump did?
Oh, yeah. And I'd lump that into the spectacular tweet about how he thought Paul Manafort was being treated even worse than Al Capone was treated,
right.
treated or something like that. So believing that, a man who was a massive criminal, it was somehow, it's just incredible. You do have to pause and just like take a deep breath,
yeah.
Because you just can't imagine that this country would ever have had a president who would have the kind of chutzpah that Donald Trump has to just sit there and look people dead in the face and say, okay, I may have done this meeting to obtain dirt from Hillary Clinton, but you know, who cares? It wasn't a crime, when in fact the law is pretty clear that as far as federal election laws go, that if you're asking for something, especially if it's from somebody who's a foreigner, that you're violating the law because and possibly giving money, or are they giving you something of benefit that has value? It doesn't have to just be money. I mean, giving you dirt has a lot of value.
It's an in-kind donation, essentially.
Yeah, it's an in-kind donation. And so that matters. And federal election law is pretty clear. So for him to just openly say that shows that he, he has this hubris that this investigation is going to touch him. And I don't really know what the game is with Rudy Giuliani and why he keeps running around and making trips to different cable news networks in order to make statements, or go to different radio networks or radio stations in the country to make statements that break news, so to speak. But, it does seem to be that they're playing this sort of game with Mueller of chicken about whether you're actually going to come after President Donald Trump or not. And I don't know. I personally think that given the sort of resources at Mueller's fingertips, I probably wouldn't play a game of chicken with Robert Mueller.
Right. And there's been ongoing negotiations about a personal interview of Trump by Mueller. And there's been a lot of back and forth as to what kinds of questions Trump's lawyers will allow him to be asked. And of course, Trump says he wants to just talk to Mueller because he thinks he can simply convince Mueller that his investigation is a witch hunt. And his lawyers are understandably nervous about him perjuring himself in any sort of official capacity meeting. So through all of this, with all of these this sort of information and these cases building up, there's a lot of pressure, of course, on Rod Rosenstein, who's the deputy attorney general, overseeing the case because Jeff Sessions recused himself. There was some information about, or some move to impeach Rosenstein. Then Paul Ryan spoke out against it, so they pulled it. Now we're hearing that Devin Nunes, a top House Republican who has defended Trump against these Russia investigations, was caught basically conspiring to get Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court before any impeachment could happen, presumably because Kavanaugh could be supportive of Trump if a case were to ever reach the Supreme Court. I mean, this is just more and more sort of strange, sordid details pouring out.
Yeah. Oh, for Republicans to say that there's a lot of nothing here, but the case, the investigation should run its course, it does seem like they are doing a lot behind the scenes to protect themselves from the outcome that increasingly seems inevitable, which is that a part of this investigation is going to touch or graze the president himself. And whether he ends up exiting completely unscathed, I do find it difficult to believe that this is going to conclude without Donald Trump being questioned. It just seems like that's, with all that we've been through the last couple of years, I think that Mueller is going to want to hear from the president himself. And if Donald Trump won't cooperate, that's going to feed into whether he builds up an obstruction case. I do think that there might have been a point a couple of years ago or a year and a half ago when the Mueller investigation wasn't quite sure they had anything on Donald Trump and that they weren't going to be able to tie a lot of the conduct of these, you know, this menagerie of characters that seem to float in and out of the Trump campaign. But he's engaged in this kind of conduct that does cumulatively amount to obstruction, it would seem, and which opens you up to charges and allegations and an interest in whether it does actually violate federal laws. And so then that makes you a greater target. It does seem like every day that goes by, Donald Trump is basically writing his own indictment that Robert Mueller could then put and turn in, and then they could issue it and let people know that President Donald Trump was now a target of the investigation. And so obviously the grand jury still impaneled, still hearing from people, people still being called in to testify, still working its way up. Donald Trump Jr., we have no idea what's going to happen.
Some wonder if Trump is basically throwing his son under the bus with that tweet that he made.
I mean, who knows? The way that he is just out for himself, I wouldn't be totally shocked if that was the way he decided to pursue things. I mean, maybe, you know, his son's done something and he thought it was really stupid and he wishes his son hadn't done that something. You know, his son is still talking pretty openly with media about the Trump meeting, even though he faces jeopardy. We don't really know what may or may not happen with Carter Page. So there's just a lot that has left to unfold. But I do find it significant still that given all of what dominates Democratic Party politics, this is unfolded. And there isn't a whole lot of evidence yet that Donald Trump is actually coordinating with the Russian government. And so I do think that, like, while this unfolds, there is a point, and maybe the 2018 midterm elections become that point, but there is a point where we really need to start transitioning and move away from this and continuing to relive the 2016 election that I see so many Democrats wanting to relive. And this corruption is important, as we said at the top of this conversation. These are oligarchs that Donald Trump is surrounding himself with. These are shady figures. These are people who are accused of crimes. I didn't even mention there's an individual, George Nader, who was a foreign policy advisor. He's been convicted of abusing children in the Czech Republic. He apparently in 1985 was importing magazines from the Netherlands of nude boys. These are kind of people that Donald Trump seemed to attract through his presidential campaign. So it's important because I imagine these are the only kinds of people that are going to surface during his re-election campaign, which I'm sure is going to be a great sequel to everything that we've already endured.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Kevin. Certainly the issues of corruption, obstruction of justice are important enough to focus on. Thanks so much for joining us. Kevin Gostola is managing editor of Shadowproof.com. He also produces and co-hosts the weekly podcast Unauthorized Disclosure. We've been analyzing the Manafort trial and the Mueller investigation at large. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo. Thank you so much.